Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast, coming to you from the cozy comforts of our palatial homes. I'm Max's next-door neighbor, Brian Hoyle, and your host for the evening. They're here, your busy backyard bartenders, the masters of the takeout menu, two homeschooling dads in their own right. They are Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And we wanted to say a what's up to everybody before we start this episode, because we know that everybody is sheltering in place and at home right now for the most part. And we just wanted to say a couple of things.
Yeah. We recorded this episode with Anthony Scalabrino of Oak City Amaretto back in January. I think it was January 27th, in hopes that we would release it somewhat soon after that time. And then we had the happy hour series, and then we had the initial parts of the lockdown happening with quarantine. And so this episode just kind of kept getting pushed back. And, you know, in a refreshingly different take, it was interesting editing the show this week and listening to it again, because it's just simply fun and enjoyable. I really had a great time re-listening to this, and I hope listeners as well will just have a good time listening to just business and life. And Anthony himself is just a super entertaining guy, very thoughtful. We get into his family, and we get into him in the military, and there's so much more to it. But I just thought it was nice to just have a nice break in the action and remember how things have been in the past.
Anthony is a great story. He's a great guy, veteran-owned business, and just to give everybody that entrepreneurial inspiration that despite what's happening now, there will be an again and a next thing. And like you said, it's a respite from everything else that's going on. So we are not tone deaf to what's going on. However, we didn't want this great story to get swept under the rug for a few more months.
Exactly. Before we get into it, just a couple things that are kind of fun. Matt and I were talking about fun follows and people that are doing a really great job on Instagram that are keeping everyone entertained. And so if you haven't already checked out certain people, it's a good idea too. Like for one, Kingfisher Bar, they're doing these cocktail happy hours almost every night. Sean and Michelle, they're just opening up their feed and having a cocktail, but also just having a good conversation with people.
I was going to say, you know who's hilarious and actual useful stuff, especially when she does her cooking stuff, is the Kitchen Zone, Lydia Santagod.
Oh my God.
She's super funny, and she taught everybody how to make macarons the other day, which I thought was super helpful.
It was really entertaining amidst the sub conversation of her creating a new relationship
with Hot Balcony Guy. A little drama to add on the, like, an episodic almost.
Yeah, stay tuned. Will they or won't they? It's the new Ross and Rachel.
What is the latest? Has the guy gotten back to her? I don't think I've gotten my fix today.
I don't know, but we'll put these great follows in the show notes along with some others that we didn't mention. Who else is out there? Well, Raleigh Magazine is doing a lot of fun things. Both Lauren, who does social media, the Kraken for us, and Bobby McFarland wrote a bunch of great stories recently, and they're doing some live stuff. When this episode airs Thursday, later in the evening, they're going to do a live cooking show with Sean Fowler of Mandolin. So that's pretty fun. So check that out, because there's just so much fun happening right now, but maybe not everyone knows where to find that fun and keep themselves entertained.
Yeah. And I'll give a shout out to Hawthorne and Wood. They're not doing anything like live Instagram wise, but they're sending out these really thoughtful, storied emails about their menu every night with wine pairings and everything. And those are really good and entertaining. And if you're out there in Chapel Hill, get some takeout. Also, before we get started, I do want to acknowledge everybody that this is also a holiday time. And I know that a lot of people can't be with their families. But, you know, for me, as we talk, Max, I'm actually preparing our holiday meal for the Seder. So Chag Sameach, happy Passover to everybody that will be celebrating on Wednesday and Thursday nights, and then for the rest of the week. And then also coming up on Easter, happy Easter to everybody. And I hope you can do your own version of whether it be a virtual egg hunt or something in the backyard.
Oh yeah. We actually decorated one of the trees in the back meadow that we share. It's like a common area with all of our neighbors. And we just put well over 100 plastic Easter eggs, and we just hung them in the trees and just kind of decorated it just to give a little bit of happiness into the neighborhood. So we thought that was kind of fun. And yeah, happy Easter, happy Passover.
And I know for the people of the Islam faith, Ramadan will be in a couple of weeks. So happy Ramadan as well.
Do you have an all religious calendar on your phone or something?
I'm just woke, bro.
Very nice. Well, on with the show. Take care, everybody.
I do want to share one tip that most restaurateurs should be doing, and that's their online platform. And eHungry.com is a great sponsor of our show because they give you and create the platform for you. So say you wanted to do takeout or some sort of order in business and increase your revenue, they will do that for your business. And they only, all they take is 1.9% of the sales that they earn. And they don't even take it for the first 30 days. And if you use the NCFB promo code, or you tell them that you heard about them on the NCFB podcast, you'll get 60 days for free. So go to eHungry.com and increase your revenue if you're a restaurateur.
Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And today we are bringing a bit of the old country, a bit of old Italy, down into downtown Raleigh through, via, Oak City Amaretto. And we are here with the founder and creator, Mr. Anthony Scalabrino. Welcome.
Thanks, Max and Matt. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, man. We finally made it happen after this crazy schedule that the Navy has imposed on you.
How dare they?
Yeah, funny thing, right? They own me a little bit and try to do my thing from the side, and now I'm here full time.
So. We love that. Yeah, so you were stationed out there in Jacksonville, Florida for a good while and came up here periodically. You're like, hey, do you want to do the podcast at like 4 a.m. on a Sunday?
No, not really.
Not at all. No, I mean, you're interesting and all, but
yeah. Sorry, I work with what I got.
Yeah. No. Well, we are happy that you're here. Gosh, I know it's not like totally out of whatever. Matt and I discussed this before. I have to mention the passing of Kobe Bryant. Mm. I have to just say it. It was wildly affecting in my life, as many people. But the one point that I hadn't made to anybody yet, and it's just something that I feel is cool. Sorry for the crazy transition. It's just so like in my head. As a fan of Los Angeles sports, everyone knows I'm a hardcore Raider fan, and Dodgers and Lakers have always been my basketball team. I usually never see a championship. I never see victory. I mean, the Lakers are my only example of what it means to win and to like to.
You had the Los Angeles Kings. You were really big on that.
Yeah. What's that? Is that hockey? I don't know what that is. Go Canes. So I'm like, Kobe Bryant and Kobe Bryant's led team through the aughts, through 2000 to now, basically now that it's LeBron's team, was like the example of winning in championships. And he did it 5 times. And I, as a fan, I had nothing to do with it except for just cheering on. But as a fan, I got to hold my head up proudly 5 different times because of his perseverance of just being an excellent, fantastic athlete and just motivated person. So that's all I want to say. He will be missed, yeah. And his daughter, and man, that was tough. So, moving on.
That was really tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anything more needs to be said. Well said.
It was great.
Yeah, sorry if you are over this, and this now comes out a couple of months later, and then it brings up bad memories.
Yeah, but, it happened yesterday as to this recording. So, anyhow. All right, so Anthony, you have your grandmother's recipe. This was once a secret recipe, as the story goes, of making amaretto from the old country of Sicily, Italy. And she essentially brought it to Michigan, where Grand Rapids?
Yeah, Grand Rapids, Michigan, born and raised since age 18. And grandma actually...
He's showing us on the hand, by the way, where it is. He's doing the Michigander thing.
Yeah, and you have to put the Upper Peninsula up there, too. Yeah. So can't forget about the Oopers. So yeah, grandma was first generation Sicilian American. So she was the first one actually born in the States. Her mom came over when she was really little, maybe 3 years old or just as a baby. And she made the amaretto. We don't actually know the origins of how she got the recipe or where she started that, maybe trading with other people and figuring out on her own. But it traces back to her, at least we know. she would make it at Christmas time for the family, and we'd gather around, you know, pour out shots and just have it with those that were of age. I may or may not have had a sip when I was younger. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good, like a hot toddy gets you a little over your cold, but grandma would make it and give bottles out to the close family members and family friends.
Oh, she would actually bottle it.
Correct. So she'd buy things off the liquor store shelf.
Yeah.
And then at the grocery store and just mix and make and cook and do not uncommon other than at scale what I'm doing now.
Cool. And so wait, how did you wrestle? Did you wrestle her to get the recipe away?
No, like, she was even strong. I think she was 93 when she passed. She probably could have beat me up until the last moment. But she gave it to my dad and my uncle, and then the grandkids eventually got the recipe. I made it for myself when I was out and about in the world in the Navy, and when I ran out, Dad took over and made the bottle, put a picture of grandma and the grandkids on the bottle and said, in loving memory of grandma, love dad, XOXO. And that's something I have still. Oh. The first bottle, first Christmas that he made it underneath my cabinet. I always joke, say it's top shelf liquor, but I keep it on the bottom shelf so nobody can see through the glass on the top shelf.
That's
and
a
grab
good dad
that.
Joke, and you're not even
yeah,
a dad
I'm not,
yet.
No, I'm no. a cat dad and yeah. a puppy dad. But, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't have to wrangle it. I got it, made it. When dad's stuff ran out, or I just wanted to save the rest of dad's stuff and try to make it. And,
you know,
just really,
I think it's a brilliant thing because, you know, Max, being behind the bar for a long time and then like creating beverage programs, mm-hmm. you pretty much have two choices of amaretto out there. You have Di Serrano and then I can't even.
And the other one.
The other brand or
yeah,
whatever it is.
I don't really only know Di Serrano, really.
There's one other brand that makes a bunch of other.
If
like.
If only there was a guy that made an amaretto. That made it. Yeah. Probably had the
you
answer.
You got Luxardo, Lazzaroni.
Okay.
But Lazzaroni's different. They're more cherryish flavoring.
Okay.
In theirs. And that's. Higher than Di Serrano type
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah.
So,
is there anybody else right now that you know of in the States that's making a local amaretto or even any other
no,
type of amaretto?
No, I think I searched this and I found one, I think in Colorado, but it was a higher price point.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're continuing that or not, but yeah. I didn't explore too much. I didn't want to, they probably do.
Yeah.
I would imagine they've got the market for that. But
I just remember, when I used to run beverage programs, I was pissed off at like our Southern service or whatever, and mm-hmm. I think they used to represent Di Serrano, at least in New York. Uh-huh. And I was like, well, I need amaretto because we were making a cocktail with it at the time and whatever, and then I had to get something else. And yep. so, yeah, I don't even remember if it was Luxardo or Lazzaroni or whatever. I think it was Lazzaroni.
And there's like Amaretto di Amaretti, and that's owned by a big corporation as
Maybe
well.
That
but that's
was it.
A $9 bottle that
yeah, you can
is,
get, like,
tastes like plastic.
And you can get all the cheap like schnapps
yeah, the cheap
version.
Stuff, right.
But that's not
yeah.
no, it's not stuff. Good for you, probably.
And I just think like that. So I mean, one, not that you did that maybe for that. Obviously, you have the
right.
history, but like it's a brilliant niche that you found. But I also have to ask, so like growing up or when you're in college, did you ever go out and like have an amaretto sour or someone poured you Di Serrano or one of the other brands, and like what was your thought?
I had Di Serrano, and I may have bought a bottle or two like in college days, and then I was like, well, I can make this stuff, and it ends up tasting better when you make it yourself because you can control the ingredients that you're using.
When you make it, I don't know if we could make it better.
No, I never
Maybe
ordered amaretto sours out in town because it was something that I could do at home, right? So if you can make a good bourbon or an amaretto or a nice beer that you ferment and at home and you'd rather drink that, you can still go out and have other stuff.
Yeah,
so that's why
also
a Di Serrano,
I mean,
but
not to say that you're like a gender identity worried, but like
right.
it's not the most manly drink to go out and order if a guy goes and order an amaretto sour.
No, you can get a Godfather though, so scotch and then parts of amaretto in there, and you've got the PD flavor with that, and that's delicious.
That sounds good right now.
Yeah,
yeah.
The Atlantic Lounge makes a good version of that.
But isn't that Drambuie though? That goes in Scotch and Drambuie that goes in the Godfather.
I have to double check, but they use the amaretto as the common one I've seen.
Cool.
You can do that.
So yeah, how do you make amaretto? Like,
what's the nut?
Yeah, an amaretto is an almond.
Yes.
So if you have any almond allergies, do not drink our amaretto. So the process without giving away the whole thing is we use a grain neutral spirit, so we currently don't distill in house. Saves a little time, and for a matter of fact, we just want something that's going to be flavorless mm-hmm. and something that's going to provide our alcohol base. So we get a 93-98% just high alcohol content grain neutral, so corn based, so it is gluten free. And then you cook down all natural sugars and almond extracts, things like that. And you cook them together. So right now, what I do, I started literally with a 160-quart stainless steel pan and a mixing and unit and induction cooktop. And I'd have it on one of the tabletops at Raleigh Rum, and I'd stir that. And that would take me about, I want to say, 45 minutes to an hour each run. And it'd take me 6 to 8 runs, so 8 hours plus, to do 2 55-gallon barrels of amaretto.
Okay.
And cooking these things down and mixing it. Now we have, I worked with a guy in Zebulon, and we made a 250-gallon tank that'll mix, cook, and do everything together. And I can do 6 55-gallon barrels or more in about 4.5 hours from cleaning, start up to start down. So it hasn't compromised on the taste, or the process is still measured and done the same. It's just,
you're not as ripped anymore though than
you were. No, it's true. Yeah. Like I have to switch
shoulders, forearms,
counterclockwise to clockwise to get, you know, dominant and non-dominant. Right. So,
yeah. So you were working, at Raleigh Rum, you were renting out a space. Mm-hmm. Was it $50 a month for an 18th of the square footage?
No, that's what other people wanted to do. So I went to a tour there. It was the first rum that I could actually palate and drink, because I always wanted to be the cool guy that could have straight rum and just drink and tell people about that, and never really had the stomach for it. Went to the tour, and then I asked my wife, hey, can I approach them about making Grandma's Amaretto? And I don't know where it came from. I think I know the kind of the back process, but it wasn't something I discussed with her before. She said sure, and the guys were like, yeah, that sounds interesting, cool. And like, they had 5 or 6 people that approached him and wanted, like Max said, like 1/8 of the space for $50 a month, and it just wasn't equitable on their part, you know, like why waste that time? So we did come up to agreement, portion of rent and bottle shares with them, and that's how we've been operating ever since March of 2017, and the product hit shelves in June after we got the licensing and everything like that. So
in June of 2017.
Correct.
So it was a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah.
April to June.
Yeah. So it takes a month or two, depending on – so you have to get it approved by the state.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got to get the federal government, TTB, to approve the label and the formula.
Which that can take 6 to 8 weeks right there.
Yeah, I didn't realize there was a thing called FIDS. So you had to get all the ingredients for your extracts and your alcohol and their sugars and everything. You have to, even though sugar is sugar, you have to get the byproducts or whatever is in there that makes that up. And it's just pretty much straight alcohol. So you just have to prove that and then get that approved and call them up and follow up. And then the label is the most difficult thing. There's been ups and downs with, we had to remove Italian American because none of the ingredients are from Italy. They're all American sourced. Even though the definition of Italian American is what I am.
Yeah.
Half Sicilian, and my grandma and my dad are full Sicilian or Italian. And so, now it just says American made liqueur. Actually, if you have some of the first bottles, it says Italian American because they approved it with that. But then later, somebody else decided it wasn't okay. So.
Oh, you usually don't see happen. Once it's like approved, it's like everyone forgets about it, and then you can do whatever the heck you want.
Well, I had to resubmit and put Grandma's face and then the veteran-owned label on there. And then they didn't disapprove it for that, but they disapproved it for something that was previously approved. So it's a it's
fun.
A unique process.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you adjust and you learn as you go about these things.
I just get this like warm feeling of thinking of what the Scalabrino household was like with Grandma working.
Well, the warm feeling was from the shot of amaretto.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably.
By the way, we're drinking coffee right now, and
it goes well in
there. You know what? Screw it. We just dropped a little amaretto in the coffee.
It's perfect.
I highly encourage you, as you're listening, if you're not driving anywhere, to take our lead. But just thinking. So Grandma also worked at the Keebler house, the Keebler factory, making. She was one of the little elves.
She was, little known fact.
Yeah.
You transform right when you go through the door, and she was not the tallest of ladies, but
in keeping with the elf mentality.
In the elf tradition. That's why she was hired. No, Grandpa was actually big guy, over 6 foot, Golden Gloves boxer, played offensive line, offensive tackle with President Ford in high school, actually.
Wow.
On Grand Rapids High. He was a freshman when Ford was a senior. So that kind of sets the stage for the era. It was after the Great Depression. He got a scholarship at Duquesne to play football, but couldn't take it because he had to take care of the family and make money. Mm. Couldn't waste precious time going to school.
Sure.
And grandma had to do the same to get the three kids through family and life. So even when they were young, she took the second shift and did that while they were at school or some sort of daycare. You know how family was, took care of people then. And she worked her way up to line supervisor, which was rare for a female and a daughter of an immigrant, because Italians weren't really sought after back in the day as like the romantic thing that it is now, or the heritage. There was a lot of
Rocky
walking
wasn't
around.
Made then. The no. Godfather wasn't a movie. Yeah,
it wasn't. Walking around with grandpa, you'd hear, you know, pretty bad slang yelled at him. And, you know, that was something that my dad and myself had to deal with the recourse or just thought, and not knowing as a young kid what that meant.
Yeah.
So
it's weird to like grow up and realize like racism or prejudice and all that, like when you don't understand it and you're like, someone's thinking that I'm not equal to them just because of the way I look. It's like,
that's and my grandpa is the hardest working person or something, that, you know, and grandma, the people that I knew that were the hardest working generation, that somebody would think that of them just because they're immigrants coming over. So
Gotta love it. But this is awesome that your grandmother, this matriarch and pretty much a badass, she's working life and creative and had this tradition. You ended up Matt can't even say, like, it was a secret. Like, how'd you pull this information from her? Like, she didn't really want to give it out to everybody. So how'd you get to know them?
Well, she didn't give it to others. The family, close family, she did.
Okay.
And that's something I had that conversation with dad, auntie, or we call her TT because I couldn't say auntie when I was growing up.
Sure.
And then Uncle John. And so three of them in the family. And I approached them after I did this and I asked them, I was like, hey, this is what I want to do. I would like each and one of your permissions, because you're the lineage of grandma. And auntie actually stayed at home with grandma her whole life. She hasn't wed at all. She took care of grandma when she got an old age, so grandma didn't have to go into housing or anything. And they were all fighting back tears when I was talking to them over the phone, you could tell, and they were honored. And it was kind of the thing, like, I want to do this. I don't want anybody to tell me what to do or how to run it, because I had a close relationship with grandma and I wanted to run it right.
Yeah.
And I didn't want anybody to owe anybody anything. Not that I'm greedy or anything, but I wanted to be able to put back in the business and give back with that business.
So what was it like after the first bottling when you presented it to the family? You had to be in the room.
Yeah. So that's a good question. And they're even walking back before that, dad, we have these shot glasses in front of us. I had about 7 of them in front of dad, different ones, like my Kermit the Frog one and just different things that I'd collected.
Yeah.
And I had sourced different sugars, extracts, alcohols, things like that. And I had 7 different varieties of the Amaretto. And I even included that bottle that I talked about that dad made that Christmas in there, just to see if that lived up to its word. Hmm. And he gets through them. He gets to his that he had made. He goes, oh, this is pretty good. And I'm like, shoot, dad's going to choose his after I do all this work, calling these people, sourcing these ingredients. And he actually chose the one that you're drinking today that I thought was the best. Nice. Like father, like son, the original Godfather has good taste. And he went with that and he loved it. And my mom had no clue. We kept it a secret from her until they came to visit in that March timeframe of 2017. And then that's when she found out and she was tearing up, of course, too. But the first bottle, dad has the first bottle ever made off the line, and he hasn't opened that up. So
that's
pretty
cool.
It's important.
I love that it is it's a family business, and it's important. Mm-hmm. It's a legacy that you're able to pass along. And then the cool part about it, and it's kind of where I thought you were going with this, Matt, earlier, is about thinking about it as the usefulness as a bartender and in a bar program. Mm-hmm. I love that you are able to play friendly with other distillers in not just our state, but just in the community, because Amaretto doesn't step on too many toes. I mean, you know, aside from Di Serrano or whatever, but like you can play nice with the local gins and the local rums and the local vodkas and whatever else might be. And so having known a ton of bartenders in the community and being in this just community in general, you are well beloved and perceived as an extra tool in our toolbox behind the bar. And so that's great too, because other distillers have been very fond of what you've made. In fact, a good friend of the show, Melissa Katrinzik over at Durham Distillery, wrote an article in Kerry Magazine about your product, which I didn't read. I'm just reading the article, like doing some research on you. And I'm like, oh, this is great. And it's like a lot of insight and all that. And at the very bottom, I see Melissa's face. And I'm like, wait, what is this? Oh, she wrote this.
Yes.
Which is great. And it just kind of shows that, you know, she's a big proponent of what you were doing. She and Lee know what they're doing, which is great.
Of course.
And so, yeah, I just love that. So how have you been able to kind of foster your community in with other distillers, and how does that feel?
But
yeah.
Before you answer that,
okay.
Let's talk about people who foster their community in a great way and who also write a lot of articles, and that's the yes. people at the Folks Foundation.
Nicely done, Matt.
That's yeah. a good transition.
Yeah, the Folks Foundation has a beautiful publication. Comes out every other month. You can get it online. You can actually pick up the hard copy yourself, too. They're based out of New Bern, and they really do – they key in on crafters of North Carolina. So – like an Anthony Scalabrino himself and his grandmother, making a product from North Carolina could definitely be a storyline that you'd read. And so it's great to like hear stories about what they're doing, similar to what we do as a podcast. So when you become a member, you have access to the journal, you have access to events that others wouldn't know about. So you can go to folksfoundation.org. You can click the link in our show notes to get more information, but follow them at Folks Foundation or check them out at folksfoundation.org.
Yeah, and I'll also take one more minute just to tell you, if you don't know about the Butcher's Market, now they can't yeah. sell your Amaretto, but no. I bet like a godfather likes a big steak or a well-cut meat and great yeah, service like in the old country where butchers were. Well, Butcher's Market, they will take anybody who's willing to work and want to become a butcher and train you into being that presentable, old school, service forward butcher. And they are actually hiring now for their new location that's going to be up in the Bedford area. And they have three other locations around the Triangle. They have one in Cary. They have one in Raleigh, near where Max lives, and in my backyard in Holly Springs. If you're looking to get into the hospitality business in a sort of different manner than, let's say, working in a restaurant or a bar, this is a great opportunity to do so. And they, beyond that, they have great meats and a lot of great prepared stuff. They even have fish. It's a great place to go. It reminds you of your local butcher, very much like maybe your grandma or your grandma's grandma had in the old country. Yeah. So go to the Butcher's Markets. com.
Sounds great. Yeah, so let's hear about the community of distillers. This is a tight-knit group of what's going on. So how does that feel to be a member of a distillery in North Carolina?
It's awesome, and I think it speaks volumes to the relationships we have and the community we have, and just, you know, being from Michigan, not being a transplant, not being a native Raleighite, if you will, like a lot of people here. I grew up Grand Rapids, left age 18, been 7-8 different countries, lived in 8+ different states. So the average time lived in a place was probably a year and a half, if that.
Yeah.
So this was the first place that felt like home because of those relationships, because of the people, because of the things to do. It falls right in line with our motto and how I try to live life, treat others how you want to be treated. So the golden rule. And that's just meeting people through various events. Like, I couldn't do this growth and get the product out there if I didn't have people excited to try something new or give me a chance, even though I have a great product, right? Some people could, you know, be like, okay, I got Di Serrano or I've got this. That's fine. Like, you're a local guy. It's probably going to be crap anyway. It's probably going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so those are the barriers to entry. But the food and beverage industry in North Carolina is just amazing. So like you said, it's not really a direct competitor with anybody. I've made gin cocktails. I make vodka cocktails. I make rum cocktails. Yeah. It goes with everything.
Lots of applications.
You can do it with anything. So
just take me back to the aha moment, though. So you were at Raleigh Rum and you liked Raleigh Rum and you said, okay, I can make Amaretto, or you had the idea that you were going to make Amaretto and then that this was the application for it?
I had no clue. It's like, I give the analogy of being like Singing with the Stars or America's Got Talent or American Idol. Like, you think you're good at singing, but you're really not, or you don't. Like, I knew enough people had tried the Amaretto and they really loved it and wanted the recipe. And I think I wasn't naive enough to think that there wasn't something there, at least to give the proof of concept. And I think those things welling up with me, as well as being I was a leader and officer in the military. You get you get some leeway. It's like I call it coloring in a coloring book. You can change the different color, but you still got to color inside the lines. Mm. So it's kind of craving and thriving, taking something from nothing, and see, because I didn't feel like I was valued enough as an individual, and I knew I had a lot to offer that I wasn't being used or tasked for.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of where it came from. Hmm. And just creating something and giving back and being insanely generous with what we had. And initially it's like, hey, can you allow us to do this free event, or can you do this event for $50 instead of $200? So it was a lot of that, and that speaks volumes to the community to accept me to do those things and be like, cool, it'd be great to have an amaretto, but also understanding where I'm coming from and giving me a shot to grow up, and now we're able to give back, you know, exponentially from that and participate in other events.
And so, in the same time, obviously, with all the work the NCRLA is doing and some other people, and really championing people like yourself that are making spirits in North Carolina, making it easier. So, and what about the process of getting it into the ABC stores and getting it on there? Was that, I mean, that, at the beginning, that must have been fairly tough.
Yeah, so it was easy getting it in to the state in general, like, because we were so young.
They'll accept anything, but they maybe might not stock it or actually
maybe accept
it.
Anything. Yeah. I will caveat that I've been around enough to hear and talk to these people that are trying to bring stuff from out of state, and these bigger guys trying to introduce new things, and the board's like, well, we can put it as a special product code. So I was lucky to not
I didn't mean to say accept anything, but like something that's in
they'll
state.
Try
they'll
it.
They'll say, okay, you can present to us. Our boards.
Exactly. So Raleigh Rum, that was the deal we had. They actually pitched it to him. So I was not a part of the process, for full disclosure. I wish I was, to kind of see that. And I was being in the military. I was so busy traveling, doing things. I was like, hey, you guys, I trust you to represent the brand. You do that. Got it in there. The rest of the case, getting in the counties and the states is a headache.
Yeah. Because you have to present to each board.
Exactly. And I tried to lean on the story. The uniqueness of that, the veteran-owned thing, because I knew it's a good product, right? So you got to get capture somebody's attention somehow.
Yeah,
so some boards will get it based off of that. Mm-hmm. Some boards want you to meet. It was a lot of planning and cold calling and a lot of heartache, or putting in a spreadsheet, putting yellow, like, hey, revisit them in 2 months. Hey, they don't have time. They leave work at noon. You got to catch them at whatever time.
Yeah. So there's, and they're hungry by 11:30,
exactly.
So you really got to get
so
there.
So there's a bunch
breakfast.
Of rules, unwritten rules, that the different counties run by, because some are old school, some are newer in the game and understand the changing of the evolving beverage industry, the craft. And I will say, for the most part, we're in about a third of the state.
Okay.
So we're in 160 some stores across the state.
And the other thing is, although I personally love the packaging, and it's called Oak City Amaretto. So like, maybe Charlotte doesn't want to buy Oak City Amaretto. I don't know.
Maybe I put myself into a corner there, but you got Cigar City Brewing, right? And High Li is now a national brand and stuff like that. So we've got brewing in here in North Carolina. So they're not natively a North Carolina brand. They're Tampa. So I don't think I limited myself. I think I wanted to give an ode to Raleigh, to the city that welcomed me.
Sure.
And that was, I could have called it Grandma Scalabrino or something like that. Grandma's Amaretto, or Amaretto di Scalabrino. I kind of wanted to take the Roaring Twenties feel, the, you know, that generation, that good feel with the hipster vibe or the new craft vibe with it, to be like, hey, this is not your grandma's Amaretto. It's like, it is, but it's something that everybody can enjoy.
Yeah. And what does if I bought a 750 ml of that cost?
So it's $24.95 with tax, is $26.70, and then if you're at the bar, it's going to be like $27 because the ABC likes to add a little bit more tax for bartenders.
Sure. Yeah. But that pricey. Seems that's pretty affordable. For a craft spirit. That's and you're only using in drinks probably like an ounce to the most, 2 ounces, because amaretto's usually a mixer. But
13, 16, whatever pours out of there, depending on what you're doing, so or more.
Yeah. So. And what a great gift too. Like, that's something that is fun to give. You know, give somebody a bottle of vodka, they're like, yeah, thanks, I'll plow through this with my friends tonight. But you give somebody a bottle like this, amaretto, it's like, ooh, we bring that out at special times.
Yeah.
You
know,
like,
have fun making different cocktails. It looks good on your bar.
Yeah, that's, I do that. Like, if it calls for a sweetener or a simple syrup, I'll throw the amaretto in there just to play with it. Even if it's not an unknown cocktail, like my favorite is old fashioned. Like, it's so easy to make. And shout out to Crude, just get some Crude bitters and throw that in there and pour a splash of amaretto on your bourbon, depending on how sweet or not you want it, and it's perfect.
Yeah.
So you don't have to muddling your sugars or whatever else you have in there. It's already melted for you.
Well, as Max has long ago schooled me on that nobody muddles anymore, bro.
I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. No, I love being ridiculed as the late 90s bartender.
Old man bartender.
Where the newer bartenders are like, yeah, we could tell that you're, you know, 40, basically. Because
really?
They're like, you make cocktails. Like, we could tell you grew up in the late 90s, early 2000s as a bartender, which they're correct. Because we did, like, the cube of sugar,
orange cherry,
an orange slice, and a cherry, and you muddle
like
it.
Like legit,
yeah. Like that was the way. And I looked at it like, oh, that's authentic. That's good. Right. And they're like, no, that's lame. That's like disgusting.
Not saving inefficient. Time.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, it's like, who wants to use a processed maraschino cherry? And you know, just like, and you get all that pith from the fruit. And like, you know, it's like a weird bitterness, not a good orange fruit bitter. And so they're like, no, just make a good simple syrup. Use bitters. You can put a brandied cherry in there if you like, a Luxardo cherry or something. And then, of course, I tried it and I went, oh yeah, that's an old fashioned. Yeah. That's the way you
do
it. So I changed my ways because that's there was a really bad time of bartending that happened, and that was when Matt and I were coming up.
Yeah,
and
it was also Cosmopolitan and mojitos were like rampant.
Oh, I don't know if anyone on earth has made more apple martinis than me, but that I just felt like that was the call at all times. So I want to learn. You've alluded to it a little bit about your time in the Navy and still current time in the Navy, but I want to get to it. I do want to talk about our friends over at the Triangle Wine Company before we get into it, because Triangle Wine Company they're huge supporters of the show. They have a great selection of wine, of beer, of the cocktail mixers that we were talking about as well, and local owned business. They're expanding always, and they provide a great bars, you can drink your wine, drink your beer, but good guys, and they help out the show. They're in Cary, they're in Southern Pines, they're in
Holly Springs,
Matt's neighborhood,
and Morrisville,
and new places coming too, not to be announced, but apparently they're expanding even more. So we'll put a button on that one.
Well, yeah, but I can't, like, for all those, and I know a lot of you out there enjoy wine. Obviously, a lot of you out there enjoy beer, and you need your mixers. It's like, in this day and age, why would you buy it at your big box store or even go to your Total Wine if you're a supporter of local? Triangle Wine Company, Chris and Glenn, are literally from the area. They live here. They support people in the area. You spending money in their shop helps them employ others, and they have everything you could want. So
yeah, I don't know if they have offshore bank accounts, you know, and they're like, you know, funneling money into third world nations. I assume maybe not, but
I deal with Chris in my day job. He's
pretty honest.
He's pretty honest, and also, you know, I don't think he has offshore billions.
No, he's a good family man, and so support Triangle Wine Company. Check the show notes so you can get details from there. You can also use the NCFB promo code. Save a little bit for yourself while you're shopping, but. You.
Yes.
And
me.
You.
Yes.
Tied a
yes,
little
sir.
Bit to my mom, who is a longtime quality inspector at Lockheed.
Okay.
She may have had the opportunity to have, like, stamped approval on a Lockheed PC Orion. Isn't that
what? P3, yeah.
P3C. P3C Orion, which is what you flew in
Correct.
The Navy. You're a pilot.
Correct.
You're like, I mean, with Top Gun 2 coming out.
I know, right?
Did you have a name like Maverick?
No, they called me Uncle Tony or T.O. Antonio just because, hey, Uncle Tony's here. Hey, come on over.
You know, like,
hey, you. Just call them out across from, I didn't care who they were. So,
yeah.
Could you do the maneuver with the MiG-3?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, if you give me the jet and I get to practice. I never flew jets. Okay. I flew in two jets, so an F-16 and an F-15, which are Air Force jets. So, which was funny because I wanted to join the Air Force as a younger kid, but the Air Force Academy didn't want me for some reason, but the Naval Academy
did.
You
gotta be smart to be in the Air Force.
Yeah, apparently. I
mean, that's the rule, right?
Yeah.
But, I'm kidding.
No, the Navy wanted leadership, so I guess that helps out a little bit too. So
yeah. No, you're a badass to be a pilot in the military. I mean, for one, you must have excellent vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, still 20/20, thankfully.
Yeah.
Sometimes I squint without glasses, so that or into the sun or something.
Yeah.
Because I, just to avoid. So I'm It's just a wonder why I still have 20/20 is what I'm saying. When I'm outside, sometimes I don't wear glasses, so that's not good.
But what's the – describe the plane that you typically flew.
So the P-3 is an anti-submarine surveillance reconnaissance and drug interdiction. I want to say Cold War era, so it was out in the 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
So you can – the ones I were flying had time stamp or stamps when they were created in the 70s. So I was flying my dad's like 72 Chevelle, basically. That's what we were doing on a daily basis. And it's just getting fitted with digital gauges in there and things. So upfitted and restructured the wings. So your G limitations were even lower and your speed, top speed was 300, but it was limited to 250. So 250 knots. So I think it's 1.3 or 1.6 times mile per hour. So it's faster, but, we'd either fly up high with cameras and sensors and spy, on bad people, we'll say that.
Sure.
And then, or drop down low to up to 200 feet above the water, dropping buoys in the water, which were just sonar basically, which is just radar for the underwater listening hydrophones. So it's just like bats using echolocation, but we're underneath the water sending out pings and, or listening passively to submarines trying to track them and, ID, you know, their usual spots and where they're going just to protect the aircraft carriers.
Sure.
Isn't it wild? Like Anthony's a mile above the earth spying on submarines and all that. And like Matt, you and I were like chopping limes and juicing them into
being idiots and muddling old fashions,
making old fashions.
Yeah.
Just like, you want another apple martini, ma'am? Meanwhile, you're spying.
You gotta be kidding me.
I mean, it's just wild. It's just a wild environment. And that afforded you to see and explore the world, as you said.
Yeah, I love relationships, which is why I like starting Oak City Amaretto too. Like, I have friends that are from Kenya, Ethiopia, Djibouti, like that part of Africa, because so many came to work at Camp Lemonnier, which is Marine Corps base, I believe, in Djibouti at the Horn of Africa. So as you can imagine, a lot of the anti-piracy stuff happening there through Somalia, which is just bordering country. So a lot of operations out of there and continuing combined operations with other countries. So you meet people from Spain, Italy, Ukraine, and all over. So it's pretty cool to see in Japan, like good ally Japan, and just seeing their different things they do. So it's pretty cool to come through that and have an eclectic gathering of personalities, because my personality, I can't tie back to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Maybe a little bit of my obviously my accent, but the different things that I've upbringing have kind of been combined and woven with all these cultures, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To have the opportunity.
Are you still, you're a civilian now?
I am. Yeah. Okay. So, December 31st of 2019, that marks 9 years and 7 months of service. So, it was good. I enjoyed it, but it was time to, put family first. I think that's the main reason.
Honorably discharged?
Yes. So as a resignation. So as an officer, you have to resign your commission.
I see.
So I'm still in active reserves for another 2 years. So if something happened, I could be called up to the big leagues again.
You're kind of always part of the family,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So thankfully, I have a skill set that is, you know, needed. So I would go back into that skill set, hopefully, and not be something that I have no experience or no desire to do. But,
sure.
So it was pretty cool. It was a dream of mine since I was about 7 years old. I have a painting of an Air Force jet that I want to do that.
That's pretty amazing.
So, and I was able to aim and focus.
I will tie that back into what Max led off the show with, just because we watched the deer basketball thing before thing. And,
Kobe,
you know,
Ryan's
Kobe was, from the time he talks about, from the time he was 6 years old envisioning Laker, and the fact that you were 7 years old and envisioning being a pilot. That's pretty awesome. And I guess, though, that you probably weren't envisioning being an amaretto distiller.
No. But in entrepreneurship, and I've thought about this internally, like entrepreneurship wasn't really a thing in my family.
Right.
My dad was a school teacher for 42 years, high school honors English and night classes. So he hustled just like grandma and grandpa did. And mom would stay at home and then did a lot of various jobs. And she's so talented with embroidering, crocheting, knitting, things like that. So maybe I get a little bit of that from mom, the entrepreneurship, taking a risk and making something and having somebody being interested by that. And, you know, it was always a good feeling at the sixth grade maker's market when you were young to make like puzzles and games, and then people would give you money for that.
Yeah.
I think I got like 250, 300 bucks from that as a little kid. Like, that's huge.
That's a lot than allowance money.
Mom helped me do that when I was younger. And, and they didn't expect to take anything from that either. Like, they're like, this is your money, even though I paid for the supplies and stuff. They never said that. Like, that's just the upbringing I had. Yeah. Like, just instill that and you work hard and you'll get rewarded for
and
it.
I guess that is now feeding into you, because this is, as you said, for now, your side hustle, Oak City Amaretto.
Yes.
And, but you've been really successful, I think, at getting into some of the top on-premise accounts. Like, Max was telling us a story where he had dinner at Brewery Bavana the other night, and you were like, oh yeah, we have it over there in their sours, not their beer sours, but their Amaretto sours. And, I imagine you're at a lot of the top restaurants as well.
Yeah. At the Ashley Christensen places, we're at,
you're at Foundation.
Foundation. So Atlantic Lounge, just the places you want to be at.
Sure.
I mean, not that there's some places you want to be at, but the places, and that speaks volumes to the community, high profile. And that a lot of that was effort of having that six pack of Amaretto, showcasing and walking around, getting a sore shoulder in Raleigh, Greensboro, Durham, Asheville, Charlotte. Like, I didn't have time on my hands. Like, I was working full time for the military, teaching ROTC at NC State. So, either during lunch or when I could get off early, or if I had classes, and then after class, because I was getting my master's while making it Amaretto, while starting a business, while just all these things. And so it's a lot of that, but also a lot of the community knowing that it's quality product. Like, I walked into a bar in Greensboro, and he's like, let me stop you right there, and he pointed to the shelf and he had it. I was like, hey, can I give you a big hug? Like, that's, and I did.
And how did he tell you how he like discovered it?
He heard it from a friend, that and she had told him about it, that it was a great product. And like, so we're in these great places because I've targeted some of them, and then other ones they've just picked it up.
And so, like,
yeah, so like, if you're in Winston-Salem or you're like wherever else, I mean, are you in, is it accessible to like the far reaches of the state?
Correct.
I mean, obviously you're here in the Triangle.
Yes.
But like, if you're in the Outer Banks or Winston, or
we're wherever. All the way from Jackson County, so all the way out west.
Okay.
Spread out through the metropolitan. So I'd say you don't have to do much more than a 30-45 minute drive to get our product, all the way to the Outer Banks, Wilmington, Southport, and then pretty much every county that touches Wake. So Johnston, Durham, Chatham, Orange, Alamance.
Let me see if I remember this from my brain. 66700?
Yes.
That's your program. Yes. That's your item.
You're
code.
Really good.
Yeah.
Nice.
66700, wow. Everybody.
That is.
That's what you type in when you're on the ABC line.
Yeah.
Take us behind the scenes for a moment in this, and this is good, gives a good insight into everybody and what it's like to be in your role, given the background that, you know, you're full-time naval, we're full-time in the Navy, you're getting your master's degree, and at the other end, you're trying to maneuver the alcohol and beverage system of North Carolina, which, by the way, just so people that are outside of the state get an idea or haven't heard us before, if you get your product in a restaurant or in a cocktail, that means you have had to go in, or they might have had heard about your product, and then you can't sell it directly to them. Mm-mm. They then need to go to their ABC store, ask those people, and then buy it, and then bring it home themselves. So it's a lot to get you. It's a big hurdle, many hurdles to get your bottle on the shelf, and then even more so in a cocktail. So let's take the specific. Like, so AC Restaurants, Cappy Pete is their beverage director. She's a good friend of the show, and I know her to
previous guest host of the show.
Previous guest host, previous guest. And I know her to be pretty, very discerning also. And can sometimes, she's got a lot of vendors calling on her. So, you know, there's sometimes people probably, you know, like, not now, thank you very much, but maybe later. Mm-hmm. And so how do you maneuver that and get it into like cocktails and into drinks over at AC Restaurants?
Persistence.
Yeah.
That's a good segue. Actually, that was a really hard restaurant group to get into. I targeted pools.
Okay.
And because we love that. We love all of them.
Yeah.
We've eaten at all of them. And I went in there, and actually, it's a funny thing, Pools doesn't have Amaretto anymore because it doesn't sell well there, but we're at
Death
Fox
and
Death and Taxes, and I think we're at Beasley's if they have it there. So it took me going in three. I spoke the turnover. Sometimes people get promoted within our restaurants and move out. Mm-hmm. So I spoke to one of the GMs and bar managers there. finally got a meeting with somebody, and because they were like, no, we don't really go through Amaretto, which I didn't. You learn things as you go, and obviously don't, because they don't have it anymore. But it took, I think, the third bar manager or general manager at Pools to actually put it on the shelf and follow up. So being a man with limited time, you know what you should do, and you know what you can do, but you don't necessarily always have the time to do it.
Sure.
And being a type A personality like me, I get, you know, jump all over the place. So it's hard to kind of focus and have a spreadsheet to just focus on 10 restaurants. I want the whole world, right?
Yeah, of course.
So I attack everything, but it was persistence, really. And another example, just the opposite side. So not restaurants and bars, but boards. I was not in Durham for a year or so until after we started. They just protect that place like none other. So you can tell them you want it all they want, but they say get into bars and restaurants. Well, it's a double-edged sword. Yeah, you're a dog chasing your tail. So I went to bars and restaurants. I went to Local 22, and I was going to go talk to them about bringing it in because I knew it was a good spot, and they bring in local stuff, a great place to drink local stuff. Went in. I saw it on the menu, Oak City Amaretto. Huh. I'm like, what? How'd this happen? I went to talk to him, waited for a while, and he's like, yeah, I actually tried to put it on the menu a couple times, but I couldn't order it from Durham because they didn't have it. And I'm like, well, this is a great use case. Took it to him, and out of frustration, kind of, I've talked to him a dozen times before putting it in there. Great people at the board, just like, it's people are out of touch with, you know, how it works. People at the bar and restaurants don't want to call for a fifth time to ask for a product, let alone something, you know, they don't make or they don't have a personal relationship. So it's hard to do that when you're not in the board. And it's hard to get into the bar when you're not in the board, and it's hard to get in the board when you're not in a bar.
Yep.
So that was a classic case of chasing my tail. But it takes finagling relationships and negotiation with the boards to kind of get it in there. But
awesome.
Now we're in Durham, and it's one of our top sellers. So we sold out of the cases they brought in the first week or the first 2 days. So we had the demand there.
Awesome.
So I don't know if you are ready to speak about this at all, but we've talked about your plans.
Yeah.
Potential of a customer-facing outlet. Am I right? Am I calling this too soon to discuss?
Maybe not too soon to discuss. I'm looking at possibly moving out. So I'm looking at expanding. I want to grow more brand recognition. And the only way to do that is to be my single brand on my own. And I've been gracious enough to, or Raleigh Rum has been certainly gracious enough to host us. I think we're growing enough to where I know I can afford my own place and try to do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe too soon to figure out what exactly it's going to be.
Yeah.
But I've been looking at real estate across the state or across the city outside the city.
With the passing of SB 290, you could start selling your products. Am I right when I say that? SB 290?
Yeah.
Right? Because there's a couple bills that happened at once. So
yeah,
sometimes
Senate Bill 290.
But you could effectively have a storefront. You could sell your wares directly out of there, which would be a great way to bring in some revenue. But
awesome.
Then also have your own bar there too, which sounds like an awesome idea. So maybe just anybody listening that likes to invest into some cool things. This is a real guy. And I'm being genuine when I say Anthony is a legit person. I mean, you could tell by good upbringing and even just being like in the military, he's got that like strong work ethic. But I was out having cocktails and dinner over at St. Rock. It was the same night I think Matthew Kelly was doing the dinner at St. Rock.
Uh-huh.
And I hear, "Hey, Max." And I look over. And again, as we've talked about before, I have a lot of Facebook friends before they are friends I've met in person. And I believe, Anthony, you and I, that's how...
That was true,
emailed many times, we've texted about getting on the podcast, doing things, and just kind of like commented on things we've done on Facebook, but I don't think we'd ever officially met in person. And
no,
so when
I don't think so.
You were like, "Hey, what's up?" And I saw you, and I'm like, "God, his face looks so familiar. Who is this guy?" And like, it took me a second, and I'm like, "Oh shit, it's Anthony from Oak City Amaretto." But that week, I had five, and I'm not kidding, five different people... It was like it was in the atmosphere, like in the universe, all say, "You got to get in touch with Anthony. Have you had him on the podcast yet? Have you blah, blah, blah?" And it was just weird that everyone kept saying this to me about how such a great guy. And then I end up seeing you at this restaurant. So it all kind of pulled together and I'm like, "Oh, perfect." And part of that too is that now you're living here and you're like a member of the community here in Raleigh, which is great too. Yeah. Raleighite.
Come on now.
Is it Raleighite?
I don't know. I think it's a Raleighian.
Raleighian?
Yeah.
I'll claim either.
Yeah.
I'll go with the flow.
But you went from a Michigander to
Michigander. Mm-hmm.
More importantly, and I think this is would be a perfect, not only segue, but harmonious relationship, is we got to get some amaretto in proof alcohol ice cream.
Serious. I know. Yeah. As we get out of here, proof alcohol ice cream, think differently about your dessert. They are. Their ice cream fused with grain alcohol, fused with liquor. And so sometimes it's bourbon, sometimes it's rum, sometimes it's moonshine. They've got a lot of different flavors. You will take some yourself as your way out of here.
Ooh.
But as the aforementioned Matt Kelly, who was there, he was here once and just threw a little scoop of ice cream in his coffee. And that was a smart idea, just like we put some amaretto in our coffee. So why don't we just get rid of the coffee and let's put the ice cream in the amaretto
on top of the ice cream.
Right? I mean, that's the way to do it. That sounds like a perfect way to go. So go to proofalcoholicecream.com. Click the link in our show notes as well. And figure out what makes best sense for you. You can get that at Triangle Wine Company. Look at how the synergy.
It's amazing.
All awesome. Here. But... but yeah, I mean, and get yourself some Oak City Amaretto. You can, I think the biggest deal. So if you're a customer, of course, you can go to any ABC store and find it on the shelves. But really, like bar managers, we got a lot of people on the inside that listen to this place, listen to the show. So if you haven't figured it out and you're just like reordering that Di Serrano and you're like, oh yeah, we're like down to a 0.2, I could probably get another bottle. Don't get it. Get this. Shop local. Sure. Get something great. It's delicious, for one, so you're going to be more impressed with it than if you just got the stuff that everybody's always had forever. That doesn't move the needle for your beverage program any longer. So this is something to change what you would do. And
it would be like a muse for you.
Yeah, you'd actually make a good cocktail with an amaretto rather than just feel like, I have to have it because it's one of those things you have to have. It's like somebody buys Sambuca and it sits on the back of their bar for like 5 years, the same bottle, and you're like, yeah, I guess I just have to have Sambuca, I guess. But like, if you knew a guy that made Sambuca, you'd be like, make a cocktail with that.
Do something with that, yeah. And email Max for the product code. He knows it by heart.
66700. I don't know why that sticks in my head, but...
It's easy, right?
Yeah, it's great. Matt, what else we got before we get out of here?
Anthony, great meeting you. Love your story and love the product. Good luck with it. And everybody out there, go get yourself some Oak City Amaretto and you will drink extremely merrily.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the NCF&B podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.